Greetings, friends,
gentle listeners, and welcome to episode 28 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Coming to you from sun-drenched Palm Desert, California, here in the golf and sporting bosom of Coachella Valley. Some just call it the Palm Springs area. I'm your host, Judd Spicer, four-time award-winning writer, associate member of the Golf Writers Association of America, former ESPN radio co-host, and so on and so forth. A lot to get to today. Great double dip of guests. It's actually a Nick-centric program. Be welcoming new College of the Desert men's head golf coach Nicholas Altman, announced as such a couple months back. He's also going to be helming the golf management program at COD. Look forward to welcoming Nick to the show. Or maybe he prefers Nicholas. We'll find out. Speaking of Nick's, Nick Barassi, he is the head golf professional at the Reserve at Moonlight Basin. And if that sounds familiar, well, yes, Uncle Juddy, the lovely Eden, trekked yonder to Big Sky, Montana, back in the fall. You've read about that, perhaps, in an article that came out back in November for Golf Course Industry Magazine, talking about the agronomy aspect of that course and some neighboring courses. And you can read about it again in the new summer issue of the SCGA's 4 magazine, more of a golf and travel piece. Big drives from Bozeman to Big Sky. That includes some more detail on the fun that can be had in, of course, Big Sky and Bozeman, Montana, including but not limited to the Reserve at Moonlight Basin. Should perhaps sound further familiar because of the upcoming match at Moonlight. It's next Tuesday, July 6th on TNT, nationally televised event pitting Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady versus Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers, the fourth iteration of the match. Look forward to chatting for the first time in a spell with Nick Barassi. Get some details on course setup for the upcoming event. Of course, none of this would be possible without a trio of excellent sponsors. That list starts weekly with Perform Better at PerformBetter.com. Just enjoyed those USA track and field trials. So many of those athletes, if not most of them, from the runners to the throwers, have some deep associations with Perform Better, sister company, everything track and field. Working on an Olympic special. Yes, the Olympics are coming back next month. Hope to get a few of those athletes, maybe some of those coaches, get us ready for the summer Olympiad. If you want to run like an Olympian, throw like one, or maybe you just want a barbell, dumbbell, stretchy band, some workout gear, you can get that too. Perform Better. Check it out, PerformBetter.com. Desert Willow Golf Resort, tee times made for the Mountain View and Firecliff courses, respectively, at DesertWillow.com. I was actually just over there yesterday, playing the Firecliff. Actually played pretty decent. Uncle Juddy hasn't played much this month. I think just one or two rounds charted, well, previous to yesterday, here in the month of June. Get out there with our guy Brian Simpson. James Dockery, head football coach at Xavier Prep High School here in Palm Desert. Also part of our fearsome foursome. Actually had it going for a while, did I? I think I was even through 7 holes. Reality set in after that. Nonetheless, final scores and outcomes aside, great to be back at Desert Willow. And I got to tell you, yeah, we're in some summer sizzle now. Course is still in terrific shape. Internationally renowned golf photography from John and Janine Hennebry. You can find them in their vast portfolio. Courses around the country, courses around the world at The Hennebrys, HennebrysS.com. Couple quick hitters, friends, before we get to today's opening image. Mentioned College of the Desert just down the way here. you know, that the driving range, College of the Center, Desert rather, driving range, yeah, it's been closed for some time across the pandemic, about 17 months, I think. It is set to reopen. It's going to be doing so soon. Monday, July 12th is the reopening date. Such a popular place for so many golf characters here in the desert. So many ball strikers. Of course, that College of the Desert men's golf team, not to mention the women's team. You can see them hitting balls there. It's been closed for a long time. It's such a great asset to our community, public golf asset. And yes, finally going to reopen on July 12th. I believe that is a Monday. And as I'm checking the calendar now, yes, that is correct. Also, want to mention quickly, big backslaps to the guy we call Smackintosh. You've heard me talk about Dan McIntosh, La Quinta-based long baller, world long drive guy, the longest lefty in the history of world long drive competitions. Again, by way of Canada, now La Quinta-based. He's been doing some great charity work, as he is wont to do. Goes to tournaments, sets up, hits your long drive for you. He just did one at the Riv for Boys and Girls Club. I think he helped raise nearly $30,000. Dan sent me a nice note about that. As you might recall, for Score Golf Canada did a piece on Smackintosh a few weeks back. It seems that golf tournaments are now coming back with regularity and aplomb, so good to see him back on the tee, hitting it far from the tips. Before we get to today's twin billing of Nick's, an opening image for you. Of course, the opening image brought to you by Hannabree Photography, whether you're a golf course owner, operator, GM, head pro, director of golf, looking to create some imagery for your course, maybe add, maybe update. I want you to check out thehannabrees.com. Again, they've been doing it for a long time, doing it successfully, not just all over the country, but all over the world. As I said, lots to get to this week, friends, but I couldn't pass on the timing of a palpable sport and society subject, which continues to place its grip across a wide spectrum of competition and society. I know, I do know that we're just all cumulatively exhausted reading, discussing, hearing about the pandemic and masks and variants and vaccines. But the latter subject, or perhaps lack thereof, it's continuing to have an impact on athletes and administrators and coaching and competition the world and country over. Look, I'm not going to tell you to go get a vaccine. Ultimately, I believe it's an individual decision. And even though we've seemingly reached latter stages of the pandemic, fingers crossed, knocking on wood, I'm of the opinion that you do need to do what's best for you, your body, and you and your family. Am I personally vaccinated? Yeah, have been for a while. And though I wasn't the first to run out to get my two jabs, I'm still not totally sold on the fact that what I put in my body was 1,000% safe. Time will tell. We just don't entirely know with absolution. And if 3 years from now I've grown a third ear or develop an enlarged heart or my man parts get funky, well, then the anti-vaxxers can say I told you so. But my decision was my decision. And it was one that I entered after performing ample research, educating myself on the vaccine, and taking time to consider the decision, what it may mean to my family, my friends, my girlfriend, my golf playing partners, and my potpourri of employers. And so I went ahead and did it. And statistically, it would appear that about 66% of the country is akin with such a choice. As for the other 34%, well, as we've seen via the domestic sporting world in recent weeks, athletes across both professional and collegiate ranks would undoubtedly appear to echo the sentiments of the nation at large. And it's starting to have an impact on the balance of competition, which ain't a good thing, dudes. Once the sanctity of those scales become imbalanced, it's tough to convince a viewing, betting, or impassioned audience in person that the game at large is totally level. From those hesitant to get jabbed to those surrounding by those hesitant to get jabbed, it's been a funky few weeks in the world of sports and vaccines, and I'm just talking domestically. Let us recall the quote I've shared several times since the onset of this show about 10 months ago. Compliments of current Cincinnati Reds pitcher Sean Doolittle who offered last year as a then member of the Washington Nationals, quote, "Sports are like the reward of a functioning society," end quote. And here we are, nearly a year and a half later, with a distinct portion of the sporting population simply wanting the reward without the function. Even with growing data showing that the vast majority of COVID deaths are now preventable, according to the Associated Press, the CDC is demonstrating that like 99% of virus deaths are now charted among the unvaccinated. And even though we understandably want to leave all this in the rear view of our lifestyles, man, on the day I started typing this, nearly 400 people in our country died of the coronavirus. Bringing it back to the fields, courts, and courses of sport, let's hearken back to earlier this month when John Rahm, in the weeks preceding his superb U.S. Open close and eventual win, he had WD, had to withdraw from the Memorial Tournament in Ohio because of a positive test, leaving behind a six-shot lead after 54 holes, and the nearly $1.7 million bounty which would have come with certain victory. In weeks ensuing, Rahm revealed that though he was vaccinated, he yet to get through the 14-day window defined as the CDC as being fully vaccinated, even though, according to the Seattle Times, the golfer could have gotten his shot or shots in his home state of Arizona nearly 4 months prior. In the NBA, Suns point guard Chris Paul had to miss multiple games in the Western Conference Finals, even though he too has reportedly received a full vaccination. And in hockey, Montreal Canadiens head coach Dominique Ducharme had to miss both the conference finals and upcoming first two games of the Stanley Cup Finals, despite the fact that he's also been fully vaccinated. So while both of their respective teams are apparently and seemingly able to press onward with success despite the losses of a top coach or player, it's readily apparent that both Paul and Ducharme have surrounded themselves with those who are either anti-vaxxers or simply too lazy to have as of yet gotten their shots. Brings us to the diamond of college baseball and the news of recent days that the University of North Carolina State, rather, their baseball team, lost out on a shot at the school's first ever College World Series crown because the NCAA forced their squad out of the tournament after multiple positive tests within the team. As a public institution, the school can't force or require jabs for students and or student athletes. Of course, the young ballers could have been like some of their teammates and brought it upon themselves to get shots. I mean, if the NCAA athletes, now backed by certain states and the Supreme Court, they want to get paid for their efforts and likenesses, can they not conduct themselves like full-grown professionals and take responsibility for their own actions, or again, lack thereof? Well, according to both social media and subsequent quoted reportage reactions, no, they can't. And not one single post or quote from the university, the players, the Wolfpack's athletic director, or the conference in which they play, the word vaccine or virus never appeared. Instead, words such as heartbroken and disbelief and anger and gutted, that narrated the aftermath. Instead of taking personal responsibility and accountability, they opted for the tenors of lament, of moan, of whine, of sadness, all calls of the loser, in my estimation and experience. Which brings us to the curious case of Cole Beasley in the NFL, subject matter that I sense I'll be touching upon far more broadly in months ahead, as it would seem that the NFL, much like the PGA Tour, has decided to go with a carrot-dangle approach to getting vaccinated, which is to tell the athletes that with vaccines, you can do this and that, and without jabs, you can't do this or that. Taking this approach in lieu of a hardline stance saying, get your shot, or you can't play. NFL kickoff just a shade over 2 months away, and by all accounts, the league has gone with a piecemeal approach to vaccines, which is all but sure, based on the evidence with which we're now armed, to produce an inequity of player education, and eventually, if not soon, a host of quarantine protocols like we've seen via other athletes, teams, and leagues in recent weeks, producing the skewed sanctity of competition. Leagues don't want to enforce the jabs. And yes, it may make some sense, being sheepish or tentative about crossing that line of personal space into an unknown void. But while all leagues' reference may not technically be employers in the legal sense. Let's face it, they basically are. And to not bring it back, to bring it back rather now to my own motivations for getting a shot, I had some concerns that certain work opportunities may abate, may leave my calendar if I didn't get vaccinated. Sooner or later, sporting leagues will need to make a hardline decision about vaccines, or the biggest jab we'll all endure is an imbalance of competition, rosters, and results across every single one of our sporting box scores.
All right, friends, as prefaced at the onset of this episode of the Spicer Speaking Podcast, it is a twin billing of great guests this week, a very Nick-centric show. Later in the program, of course, we'll welcome Nick Ferrassi, head golf professional at the reserve at Moonlight Basin up in Big Sky, Montana. But let's start with a localized Nick, Nick or Nicholas. In recent months, he was named the new men's head golf coach here at College of the Desert. He will concurrently be a full-time tenure track faculty member leading the golf management program. He's a desert native, and he's bringing with him an impressive CV, a fine resume to his new post with the Roadrunners. Welcome Nicholas Altman to the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Coach, appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for the intro, too.
Well, there's definitely more to get to. I probably shortchanged you on a couple of the accolades. I do want to start with the fact that you are, in fact, a desert native, yeah?
Yes, I was born in Desert Hospital in Palm Springs and grew up in the desert. I did go away for high school and college, but grew up my elementary and middle school years here, and family's still here, so.
Okay. Does the new gig, does the new job, does it represent a return to the desert for you, or have you been back here for a little bit?
It was a return. So the previous job I had was in Virginia, near DC. I was a director of instruction at a Topgolf there. So kind of an interesting place to work and fun and doing a lot of lessons and, you know, group events and a lot of teaching.
I want to get to some of those other aspects of your resume as well. It's a it's an impressive list of things that that you've done in your golf career. I should probably also mention a PGA member for almost a decade, if I've got that accurate.
Yeah, 2012. I was also PGA certified as well in 2015. So that's like the next level certification the PGA does in teaching and coaching. So.
Also on the CVs, he's worked with Troon Golf. He's worked at the Golf Academy of America in Carlsbad down the way by the coast. Also got a BA from Boston College in English in philosophy. I'd be curious to ask about that a little bit. But let me first get to this, man. What was it that that brought you back to the desert? I trust it was the job, but was it something more?
Yeah, I think, you know, first of all, just the history and tradition of that program, the golf management program, and just where it's located. You know, the desert is such a golf paradise, right? So to me, it's such a great opportunity because, you know, we're right in golf paradise, and we're able to just have a great community around us. And the tradition of that program, the golf program and the golf team, it's a great opportunity. The other thing that really drew me was just, I like working with young people and mentoring. I've also taken a spot on the PGA Desert Chapter board as the associates chair. So working with the guys work and gals trying to get a PGA membership, and also on the mentorship board. So that's something that I really take seriously and really enjoy, is working with younger people, helping them grow their careers.
All of those aims and endeavors, really impressive, and perhaps even more so as a personal interjection for me. And I dangled this for you before we got to recording, but you mentioned the all the previous success of the COD Roadrunners. Of course, in the 55-year history of the men's golf program, 6 state titles, 44 conference championships. Now, the vast breadth of that came via my late friend, the great Tony Manzoni. In Tony's time with the Roadrunners, 5 of those state titles under his leadership, I believe 29 conference championships, including 28 of those consecutively. You mentioned being a PGA member. Tony was a PGA member for, I think it was 52 years before his passing. The facility where your team will practice and where the golf center is housed, Tony basically built that. And I won't lie to you, you know, along with writing about Tony and having him on our former radio show, we also became pals. And it was just somebody that, whether it be my own golf swing that he'd come take a look at when I was hitting balls at the range, or, you know, even so kind as to invite me to his home and have a cocktail, somebody with whom I became very close, somebody of whom I was so very fond. Given all that, Nick, I've been a bit critical of the College of the Desert in the last 4 years. They've had some gentlemen that were certainly qualified for the job that you have now taken over, but it's been a turnstile, man. We've seen guys come and go, and the program has just lacked the consistency and thereby the success all pre-pandemic that Tony had really established. Now, given all that rich history, I know that you and Tony didn't really know each other, but I know you're familiar with the success. Broadly speaking, what's your game plan to bring the program back to what it once was, Coach?
I think I have a real advantage because I'm, you know, full-time faculty member in the golf management program and the golf coach of the men's team. So those two programs are really interconnected, in my opinion. And it's a great way to kind of build both at the same time and recruit people at the same time for the two different things. So, and it's also allows me to really 100% be there for the team, be around the program, and just, you know, be there for the students and the athletes. So that's my general idea. And then I just have to create a culture and build on the success that Tony built in the past. You know, create a culture where our students are looking to grow and improve every day and work hard. That's my plan. And, you know, one of the examples of that, of the program being together with the golf management program, is actually our women's golf coach, Erin Lind. She went through the golf management program, I believe, under Tony.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so she competed on the women's team, and now she's a pro instructor at the Lakes Country Club, I believe, and also the head coach of the women's team. So it's kind of a great example of how the two things can go together and, you know, be successful.
And she has had success as well. Mentioned the state titles, memory serves, in the not too distant past, she brought one to the women's team. I think it was 3 years ago. Delve a little bit more, if you will, Coach, into your leadership style, philosophy, coaching philosophy. I mean, we mentioned all the accolades, all the success that you've had, certainly a good portion of that working with junior golfers or younger golfers. You're soon going to lead a team of young men in the Orange Empire Conference as that gets back to play after missing a season due to the pandemic. What are some of your coaching and leadership philosophies for these guys?
Well, a big thing for me is just sort of understanding where their games are at clearly, and then coming up with a plan for improvement. You know, if you can, that's the basic idea of improvement, right? Know where you are, know where you want to get to, right? Your goal, and then build a plan to get there. So that's kind of where I fit in. It's helping them build a plan. And then I also try to help them become their own coach and their own caddy as they're playing, just really understand their games better and know kind of how to make decisions and how to also just make decisions off the course too, and make the right decisions there. So that's my philosophy. I've already got sort of a team meeting going this summer to kind of gather everyone together and start getting to know each other. And, you know, the team's not fully finalized yet, but I'm at least bringing the students together and getting to know people that are interested and that I've recruited. So, you know, we're starting early. We're trying to get everyone on the same page. I've already been giving them assignments for practice and assessing their game. So that's my philosophy and my thoughts.
Of course, we're in not just a junior and professional, but certainly a collegiate hotbed of the country. Again, just 100 miles away. It's Pepperdine, won the national championship this year. So there are all manner of great programs, great coaches, whether it be at the Division I level or the JUCO level. Any program or coach that you've modeled your style after, or that you aspire to model a team after?
Well, I mean, like, as you mentioned, Pepperdine, I know one of my good friends is friends with the coach there. And, you know, you can't go wrong with modeling after them. I mean, I've had a lot of good mentors in the golf industry as well. Not necessarily coaches of teams, but just coaches that I've learned from in how to instruct and help players get better. One of them was a guy who still teaches here, Barry Clayton. He teaches at the Westin Mission Hill. So I learned a lot from him about teaching golf and just helping players get better. Yeah, I've had a lot of good mentors. I had a great guy at Topgolf who is the national director of instruction. His name was Dennis Harrington, and he actually played on the tour for a little bit. And he was a great mentor, just figuring out, you know, how programs to help people get better. And Topgolf was a little different because we were dealing with a little bit newer golfers, but still, you know, you gotta take those newer golfers and help them get to where they want to go.
What about yourself as a player? Have you plateaued? You still play a lot? How's your game?
My game's okay. Actually, coming back to the desert's been great because I've been playing a little more, getting to practice. I don't get to play as much as I like, but you know, when I get out there and play, I can still shoot around par every once in a while. So I can get it around when I need to.
This question, I guess, for potential future players of yours, I might get a better sense of you and what you like and what you look at. But for professional golf, whether it be the men's or women's tours, any golfers in particular that you've long enjoyed watching, or any particular swings that you really favor?
You know, I was always a Tiger fan growing up. So, I mean, that's almost everyone, right? But these days, I like Jordan Spieth's style, even though he's struggled recently, but he's coming back. I just like how he grinds and really kind of works his way around the golf course, even when actually he's not hitting it great, he still is able to shoot a score. So that's what impresses me about him, is he can take a round that should be a 75 and make it a 69 or something. So that's one thing that I want the students to do too, is when they don't have their best stuff, still be able to shoot a good round.
As far as those students and those student athletes, Coach, you referenced that you have a team starting to form. Can you give us a sense if there's some local players? I guess, you know, Tony, to reference, you know, his work again and his teams, he had a lot of success meshing some strong local players, or certainly regional players, with international players. Now, I realize that in this timeline, some of the international guys and travel, it's probably going to be a test. But for a core that you've got now, can you give us a sense of how many players and where they might be from?
Well, we're looking to build a roster of about 12. But golf is a spring sport, for men's golf at least. So we've got some time to really finalize the roster. I have quite a few. There's a bunch of students coming from the Valley here that have that were successful in the DVL and the the leagues in the Coachella Valley and in the CIF. So I've got some good players coming from. That's going to be the majority of the players on the team, I believe. But I do have some other players coming from San Diego area, LA, and even out of state students as well. And like you said, I have gotten interest, and I've spoken to several recruits from international countries, Europe and Asia. Like you said, though, it's just a little too, I think, uncertain at the moment with everything going on still, even though things look like they're getting better.
Pipeline, when there is an opportunity for the travel to be fully opened up. I mean, it was impressive. I mean, really, kids coming from all over the world, and you referenced it right there, Europe, Asia, parts of Scandinavia, coming to Palm Desert to come play college golf. I want to ask you lastly here, Coach, referenced that the golf center, the college golf center, it's been closed down during the pandemic for about 17 months. That is going to reopen to the public on Monday, July 12th. I have kind of, I don't want to say struggled to ascertain, but I'm a little cloudy for the campus itself. I got to imagine that it's been somewhat of a challenge for you coming in these latter stages rather of the pandemic. Is the college campus totally open now? Are the kids all able to take their classes and to be on campus again?
They're still ramping up.
Okay.
It's not 100% open. They're slowly, taking their time to figure out what is essential and then building up from there. It seems to have some momentum now, but not 100% open yet.
Yeah, and I should say, at least in my opinion, the college has really had a philosophy of prudence regarding its students, its students' athletes, and its campus, which I've totally appreciated. They've been very much at the forefront, very proactive in the prudence and keeping people safe. But it is good to hear that little by little, and hopefully by the time your season gets underway, I believe in January, that will be totally open. Is that when the season starts, sir?
Yeah, the spring semester in January, it'll be starting. And I just wanted to say, too, that the fall sports have been approved to play as well. So that's a good example of things starting to open up a little bit. And, the college is really taking a good, as you said, a very prudent way, but they're reviewing everything and things are looking good now. So.
Well, Coach, I'm so appreciative of your time. Again, genuinely having followed the program closely and seen it go through kind of a funky period in recent years. Again, the gentlemen that were leading the team, they were qualified guys, but it became something of a turnstile. So when I saw in recent months that you were hired to lead the team, to lead the program, reading about you, reading about what you've done in the golf world, and now hearing your beliefs and philosophies, I'm really excited and very enthused, genuinely, to see where you can take the COD Roadrunners, Coach Altman. Appreciate your time, man, and I will see you on the driving range. You'll recognize my ugly swing instantly. If you get time for a couple tips, man, I'm always ready.
Anytime. I'll be out there helping you out. So, yeah, thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited, too. So it was a great chance to talk to you.
Thanks, Coach. All right, friends, as prefaced at the onset of the show, a palpable twin billing of guests. We take it from here at the desert sea level all the way up to over 7,000 plus feet of elevation in Big Sky, Montana. The world can be a cyclical place, the golf world especially, sometimes. Just a couple weeks hence, I was getting ready to share with you my golf and travel article experience that the lovely Eden and I enjoyed back in the fall to Bozeman, Montana and Big Sky, Montana. Had a chance to have some fun, ride some bikes, do some hiking, and play some great golf, including, but certainly not limited to, what really was the most memorable experience of that trip, the Reserve at Moonlight Basin. And little did I know that in the timing of this Four Magazine article release, going to come out in a few weeks, there'd be some national news regarding the match at Moonlight. It's going to take place next week, specifically Tuesday, July 6th, 2 p.m. Pacific time, if I got that right. It is the fourth iteration of the match. You can watch it on TNT, pitting Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady versus Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers. Going to be super interesting. This is the version of the match that I'm certainly most interested in watching. Here to share some insights on the golf course and the match and Montana golf and travel, it's Nick Barassi. He's the head golf professional at the Reserve at Moonlight Basin. Nick, it's been about 10 months, man. Good to chat with you again.
Yeah, great to chat with you again, Jed. I appreciated your time last fall and really getting to show you the area and kind of what Moonlight has to offer. And I'm glad we've reconnected and are able to talk about some exciting news.
Absolutely, man. And we will undoubtedly get to that. Of course, when you and I chatted last, a couple articles, there was the one that came out in November talking about the agronomy, namely for Golf Course Industry Magazine. And now the Montana Golf and Travel article for the SCGA's Four Magazine. Right about the time that we were there, Nick, Montana was enjoying a kind of still peak pandemic timeline, a surge of visitors. I can only imagine here in June, almost July, that getaways to Montana are proving a popular place.
Absolutely. You know, COVID had its ups and downs everywhere, but I think, you know, Montana and specifically Big Sky was an area that people were gravitating towards to get away from the masses and still be able to kind of recreate even given the pandemic.
And are you seeing that as we get into this summer season as well, that that you guys are pretty busy?
Yeah, we're definitely on record-breaking numbers. You know, we kind of ballpark, you know, a 10% increase just as an estimate year to year as the club grows and Big Sky grows. And Moonlight's grand opening was in 2015, so we still have memberships available. And I think all in all, everything is starting to get really busy, not particular to just Moonlight Basin, but the Big Sky kind of Bozeman area is very attractive to those that like the outdoors and like to recreate in terms of skiing, fishing, golf. It's got a lot of great outdoor opportunities that are basically in your backyard. So it's got a lot, especially for families. And I think we're definitely seeing a lot of growth in this area, let alone just Moonlight.
Yeah. And per that growth, now when I was there, you of course, there's a sister course under Lone Mountain Land, not exactly right next to the Reserve at Moonlight Basin, but not too far away, Spanish Peaks. That's a Tom Weisskopf design. I saw the biggest crane I've probably ever witnessed in my life that was in the process of constructing the Montage Hotel. Is that near its completion, Nick?
It is. So I know that they've started taking, you know, reservations for this upcoming winter. I think we're pretty close to their grand opening date. I probably should know that answer, but I've been pretty focused on the Moonlight side of things. But visually, it looks very close to being done. I'm not sure when their exact time frame for opening is, and I know construction is on just about every corner in Big Sky and Moonlight and Spanish Peaks. There's a lot going on, and all of these construction projects were happening during the pandemic and COVID. So I think we've, you know, hit a few little hiccups in terms of delays, just dealing with, you know, the pandemic itself. But I do know that Montage is scheduled to be open this year.
It looked to be an impressive structure in process. And of course, Montage, an impressive brand, did not have opportunity to play Spanish Peaks, but of course we did have a chance to take on the reserve at Moonlight Basin, the big, burly, beautiful Jack Nicklaus design, over 800 acres of elevated play at over 7,000 feet, all sorts of just gorgeous mountain terrain, trees, and some ruggedness. Playing at 8,000 yards from the tips, and if I have my research right from my article that I wrote back in the fall, Nick, carding a full-on slope rating of, wait for it, 153. Does that all sound like some accurate description of your golf course?
That definitely does. our current slope and rating, the slope rating is 153, and the course rating is 78.5 with a massive 8,000 yards from the very back tee. So let alone the yardage, I actually think it plays close to 7,600. You do get some more ball flight with the elevation that we're at, and some of the topography of the holes don't play to the number that's written on the scorecard. But I definitely would say it's a very challenging golf course. It's got, you know, challenging tee shots, challenging greens. There's really just chunks of fairway with, you know, maybe 6 to 10 foot strips of rough kind of bordering them. So there's not much room for error. If you're missing the ball, your ball's basically going off the side of a mountain. So you're reloading, makes it very difficult.
Which we did several times over. I think that you guys gave us an entire box of balls, and we finished out our round by playing with a couple practice balls that we had found somewhere in the brush. As far as some of those design elements, not just limited to the length and that grandeur, but a lot of character in those greens as well, Nick.
Yes, the undulation in the greens are pretty impressive. There's definitely spots on our greens, and our greens aren't very big square footage wise in the whole relative to courses in the nation. But there are places on those greens that if you're there, you're probably not going to keep your ball on the green on the next putt, and you'd be looking at a three putt. So it's definitely a lot of course knowledge in terms of how to play it and kind of where to miss to keep your ball in play, and making sure that you know where those tiers are on those greens. So that way you can ideally place your shot on that tier. Otherwise you're looking at at least a three putt.
Speaking of some of those greens, let's specify a few of the holes as we kind of segue into what the nation is soon to watch on TNT on The Match. Again, that's Tuesday, July 6th. A couple of your favorite holes on this golf course, Nick.
Yeah, purely my favorite hole on the golf course is number 6, and it's actually going to be number 15 during the match. So we're starting the match on what is our number 10 will be number 1 during the match. Kind of our decision on that was that number 9 is a par 5, where your approach shot to the green is over water. It's a beautiful hole, and definitely a hole that would be awesome if the match were to be close. So we figured that would be the best hole to finish on. So we flipped the 9s for the match, which I'm pretty excited about, because I do think number 9 is a great finishing hole. And number 6 will actually be number 15 during the event, but it's a 633 yard par 5. And it's probably one of the most aesthetically pleasing holes you could imagine. From the tee box, you've got Fan Mountain to your right, the Spanish Peaks range behind you. Straight ahead is the Cedar Mountain range, which is a range that's kind of blocked the majority of the time by Lone Peak. Lone Peak kind of towers over everything. So views of Cedar are kind of hit and miss as you're making your way around Big Sky and the Big Sky area. So that hole kind of highlights the Cedar Mountain range as it's the backdrop behind the green. But a beautiful hole, very challenging. But definitely my favorite, and that's purely from an aesthetic point of view.
Well, speaking more toward the grandeur and the aesthetic, it's coupled with a lot of nature. The only golf course I've ever been on with bear spray affixed to the golf carts. Nick, are we nervous that there's going to be any bear, I don't want to say bear attacks, that would be a little aggressive, but bear sightings when the national TNT cameras are on your golf course next week?
It's definitely an area that we want to make sure, you know, everyone's got bear spray, and that's how we operate on a daily operation. There's bear spray in every golf cart, every staff cart. Maintenance vehicles have bear spray. There's definitely bears around, and you know, it is still Montana, so there's a sighting is definitely a pretty good possibility. But I don't anticipate any problems with the wildlife. There is a lot of wildlife, including black bears, moose, elk, deer, that kind of roam around the golf course area, as it's surrounded by 8,000 acres of undeveloped, undisturbed land. So it's an area that a lot of animals call home.
Friends, you're tuning into the Spicer Speaking Podcast. Nick Barassi is the head golf professional at the Reserve at Moonlight Basin in Big Sky, Montana. Again, that's the site of next week's The Match at Moonlight, pitting Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady versus Bryson DeChambeau and Aaron Rodgers. You can watch that on TNT at 2 p.m. Pacific time. Nick, you mentioned that you're flipping the nines for the match next week. Any other particular preparations, maybe from the agronomic side? Anything else in particular that you guys are doing to get ready for the match?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of preparations that we're doing on and off the golf course. I would say that, you know, some of the biggest things that we've done currently is, you know, kind of fine tuning the smaller aesthetic details of the golf course. It's going to be, you know, on live television, so we want to make sure it's showcased in the best way possible. And, you know, hats off to our golf maintenance team that's putting in countless hours to get this place looking the way it does. And I've got a lot of feedback from our membership currently in the past couple of weeks as they've been playing the course, that it's in one of the best conditions they've ever seen it. And, you know, part of that is the amount of effort that our golf maintenance team has been putting into the course. And also we did have a pretty mild winter with not as much ice damage as we typically endure. And that's just part of, you know, doing business at 7,500 feet with a very seasonal golf course.
Nick, this next week will be the first time that not just the golfing public, but the sporting public at large, will be the first time they lay eyes on your golf course. Since this announcement was made that you guys were hosting it, what's changed for you? Has the phone been ringing off the hook? You have a lot of interested new membership. What's been going on since this announcement?
Yeah, I think, you know, thankfully the golf shop number is not a publicized number, so we didn't receive a ton of calls. My personal phone was definitely blowing up on the day that it was released, and Phil and Tom and Aaron and Bryson posting on social media about the match. That created a lot of interest. We're definitely still, you know, kind of in the COVID boom, and now with the match being announced, it's like pouring gas on a fire. It's really starting to take off with a lot of interest, and I think that is going to be tenfold once the nation gets to see the landscape of this golf course, and you know the area of it. It's going to put Moonlight and Big Sky, Montana, I think, on the map, which has been kind of under the radar for quite some time.
Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, but while the nation outside of Big Sky, Montana will be watching this on their respective televisions and devices, the live spectatorship during the match, is that limited to the members?
Yes. So we're limiting the fans or the attendance of the event to Moonlight members only. Part of this is, you know, the nature of the golf course is not really suitable for folks walking around. It's 10 miles of cart path to play 18, and there's 1,500 feet of elevation change throughout the golf course. So there's not a real way for you to be in an area to see a lot of holes at one time. The golf course is on a little bit over 800 acres, so it's very spread out. The players in the match will all be taking their own golf cart, so they're going to play pretty quickly. So in order to keep up with them, you basically have to have all the fans in a cart following them, which just wouldn't be suitable for something like this. So we're going to do a member only watch party, which will be located in between 1 and 10 tee box and 9 and 18 greens. So spectators will be able to watch them hit on the range, getting warmed up, tee off 10, tee off 1, and then finish on 18 and 9. Outside of that, that's kind of all we're allowing on property. And, you know, Big Sky in general, let alone Moonlight, the infrastructure to have a fan base open to the public, we just don't have the infrastructure for that.
I was going to say, I mean, thinking of my experience there and then going back and looking at some images of the course, including images from the Hennebrees, by the way, have been out there to shoot Moonlight, one of our sponsors here, Nick. I think it's a logistically wise choice. It would just be tough to have people, you can't even really say strolling around the peripheries of that golf course. It would be near impossible to have that as part of the logistic of the event.
Correct. And being that it's a, you know, it's a live televised match with only four players, it's not like your typical tournament where there's group after group and you could post up on one hole and watch the whole field play that one hole. That's going to be one group playing it, and then that's kind of it. So there isn't the opportunity to sit and watch, as you'd only see the players go through it once.
We've referenced the players a few times, Nick. Four for four, all intriguing participants in what is an exhibition, and money going to charity, of course, but these are all champions. These are all competitive gentlemen. They're going to want to do well. Do any of the four, or perhaps all four, have some experience at the reserve at Moonlight Basin?
So out of the four, we just had the pleasure of hosting Aaron Rodgers here for a practice round, so he can get comfortable and kind of learn the area and the course. Surprisingly, we haven't seen the other three play the golf course yet. Granted, we still have a week before the match transpires, so I'm sure that we'll have a couple of them wanting to go out and at least drive the course to get a view on it before they play. But nothing has been set for any of that, and Aaron is the only player out of the four that has played the golf course.
I gotta say, that surprises me a little bit, given the brawn of this golf course. And yeah, it's an exhibition, but these guys don't want, I'm not gonna say embarrass themselves, but given how challenging this course is, I guess I would have thought that maybe all of them had at least got a round in.
Right. And I hope that they all do. And I know that they're all very good players, and, you know, being that elite of an athlete in their respected fields, I'm sure they've got plenty going on. And, you know, the US Open has just passed. So, you know, Bryson and Phil have probably dedicated their time towards that, as that's a major event. So I think once we get a little bit closer here, hopefully we're able to get them out there and kind of show them the ropes before they're in front of the nation.
It's my understanding, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, that we're looking at a modified alternate shot format whereby each player will hit his respective tee shot. The team will choose the best of the two, and then they will alternate from there until the ball is in the hole. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And that'll be the format for all 18 holes, which I'm very excited about. I know that there'll be a lot of strategy amongst the players in terms of which drive to take for their respected team in terms of who will be hitting then the second shot. But it will be exciting to see if, you know, when Tom and Aaron hit the fairway or hit a great tee shot and letting Phil and Bryson unleash on it at this elevation, there's definitely some holes that I hope the shot tracer picks up the ball, because the yardages are going to be pretty remarkable.
I would agree. And I would also agree with that choice of format. I mean, if they just all went and played their own balls, all due respect to Tom Brady, the greatest football player ever in my estimation, and Aaron Rodgers, MVP and Super Bowl champion. But if they had to play their own ball on this golf course, that could be a long telecast.
Yeah, I would agree. And it'd be a long telecast for anyone playing the course. It's just, let alone the drive time of driving around the course. It's just not a course that is really suitable to play quickly.
What are your responsibilities going to be on the day of the match, Nick?
You know, there's a lot of things going on. I'm going to be here, kind of be, you know, on point for whatever the production crew or the players need. I'll be their go-to guy in terms of getting them what they need. I believe, you know, Turner Productions has got, you know, a total of 250 employees coming out. I don't know if they're all directly work for Turner, but that's the number that I've been given. So this definitely isn't their first rodeo. They know what's going on. So in terms of, you know, my responsibilities, I've more or less just offered my knowledge of the area and, you know, maybe some things to look at. And then I'm going to be available to help wherever is needed. But they're pretty independent in terms of having everything kind of dialed in.
I'm going to close with this one, Nick. When I was out there back in the fall, I guess that was September, little birdie told me that the course record, and I'm not sure if this is accurate or not, might need a clarification here, was authored in somewhat close proximity to my visit by former U.S. Open champion Lucas Glover, and it wasn't that low of a number. Again, the little birdie told me that was Lucas Glover. I think he said he had authored a 66 or 67. Is that correct?
That is correct. It was Lucas Glover with a 67. I actually had one of my assistant pros play with him just to provide some, you know, course knowledge in terms of, you know, lines off of tee boxes, that sort of thing, as Lucas had never seen the golf course before. So it was pretty remarkable to see. Lucas said he was hitting the ball very well that day, which definitely helps. But that is our current course record at 67.
Which should say something to the listeners and eventual viewers of the match. I mean, that, you know, we got what, 16,000 courses in the country, and most of them, a course record, especially if a touring professional has been there, is usually around 61 or 62, maybe even lower. Yours is 67. I think that gives a sense of what a great test the reserve at Moonlight Basin is, Nick.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, kind of what you mentioned, you know, other course records being 61, 62, and ours is sitting at 67. Granted, we haven't had a ton of tour professionals play it, but, you know, our course rating is 78.5, which would list that a scratch golfer would shoot 78.5. So it's about a 6-shot differential, which I think is right. And I think 67 will be a hard number to beat.
Nick, so appreciative of your time, man. What a pleasure to reconnect. Selfishly speaking, pretty pumped up about the coalescence of the match in my upcoming article for the SCGA's 4 magazine. Can't wait to see the reserve at Moonlight Basin on national television next week. I think it's going to be a blast to watch, man. I look forward to checking it out, and congrats on getting this event to highlight your course.
Thank you, Judd. And thank you for your time and the invitation to have a conversation with you via your Spicer Speaking podcast. And I'm very thrilled about this event. I've worked here this is my sixth year here at the reserve at Moonlight Basin, and always kind of joked about what a tour professional would shoot or if we could host anything here, just because of the challenge and, you know, pure beauty of the golf course. And little did I know that opportunity was going to happen, and here it is. We're a week away, and I couldn't be more excited.
Well, congratulations, man. I look forward to checking it out next week, Tuesday, July 6th on TNT. Appreciate your time, Nick.
Thank you, Judd.
All right, dudes, that's going to take us out for episode 28 of the Spicer Speaking Podcast. So appreciative of your time, your interest, your ears. Thank you to my guest, Nicholas Altman. Best to him at College of the Desert. And Nick Barassi. Really appreciate that preface for next week's The Match at Moonlight Basin. Of course, this program would not be possible without a trio of excellent sponsors. That list starts weekly with Perform Better, performbetter.com. Free shipping on your orders over $49. Desert Willow Golf Resort, right here in Palm Desert, California. Firecliff and Mountain View courses. Don't forget about Palm Desert Golf Academy. And when you go online, be sure to check out that summer VIP card. Last but never least, internationally renowned golf photography from John and Janine Hennebry. Take a look at their vast portfolio at The Hennebrys, HENEBRYS.com. Everybody have a great 4th of July long holiday weekend. As the saying goes, don't blow off any thumbs, light and get away. Be safe out there, friends. Be good to each other, and be well.